Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Julie Jeezy, and this is Family Matters. Just like every Wednesday, we'll have a great show for you tonight. And this one is especially meaningful to me. It is going to be a wonderful buffet of women who are a part of a group that was started about 5-6 months ago called Leading Women for Shared Parenting. I don't think there's ever been a group like this. It is an incredible group of women who have come together to support shared parenting issues all across the United States and Canada, and now it's growing worldwide. You might ask, why? Why are we doing this? Well, a growing number of children are being raised without the benefit of meaningful engagement of both their parents. And as contemporary research conclusively demonstrates, a child who effectively loses one of his or her parents through a custody decision usually are at risk for a number of negative personal and social outcomes well into adulthood. Consequently, Leading Women for Shared Parenting, or LW4SP, is sending our elected representatives and the judiciary and policymakers all across this nation, Canada, and the world, the very clear message that changes must be made in family law. They must be implemented. Changes that will ensure children the opportunity to remain fully engaged with both of their parents into adulthood. And I want to get right to our first guest, who is Rachel Alexander. Rachel, how are you?
Good. Thanks for having me on the show.
Thanks for being on tonight, and you're the first of our guests. So I wanna talk about you for a second. Tell me all of the exciting things that you do every day. I mean, I can go through. You're a political columnist and an attorney who writes for Town Hall, the Seelis Foundation for Public Policy Research, Christian Post, and the UK Guardian, and you also edit the Intellectual Conservative. If you have spare time, what on earth do you do?
And you also forgot my day job, which is I am the editor of the Western Shooting Journal.
Oh, and that's the most exciting part for me. Do you know Illinois is now a concealed carry state?
Yes, thanks to the appellate court striking down the law.
Thank God for the appellate court, and thank God that we have a legislature that's able to stand up to this governor that we have who can't seem to make a decision about anything. And now, you know, I carry concealed carry for Utah and Florida, and I'm so excited. I've already got the classes lined up for Illinois, and it's an exciting time in Illinois for us.
It is, yeah. Those Democrats from downstate have the guts to stand up to that liberal governor up there.
That's right. That's right. Senator Gary Forby and Brandon Phelps, Representative Brandon Phelps, did an outstanding job. So, all right, that's your exciting part of your job. Now, the other part of your life, you are also in this great group with me, Leading Women for Shared Parenting. Tell me why you got involved.
I got involved because of the personal experiences I had gone through educating me about this issue. I mean, basically, you know, I don't have children of my own, and so I think I can really speak to a lot of women out there who don't have children but are being negatively affected by the way our laws and child custody and courts are set up. I've got stepchildren, and I've had stepchildren in the past, and I've had them full-time. So I know, you know, what it's like to raise kids full-time. And I can tell you that what happens is the way the courts are set up, it punishes the parents, the dad usually. So if you come along as a stepmom later, you get punished too. So, you know, that's part of the reason I got involved. And the other reason I got involved is over what happened to my late brother. I really believe that due to the abuse he was subjected to by the child custody system, he ended up dying from it.
And there's no question that these family court situations, and especially if there's alienation involved, become extremely stressful. You're financially devastated. You're emotionally and psychologically just crushed. And it can result in death in some cases. So I want to hear the story. Tell us all about what happened to your brother. If you can, and as I said, we've only got 15-minute time slots for everybody. So if you can get us to the real crux of what happened and why.
Absolutely. I'll go as quickly as I can. Basically, my older brother is brilliant. He graduated Phi Beta Kappa from University of Washington, Oxford. he went and did his master's at Harvard, you know, where he taught honors, history and literature. So he's brilliant. Well, what happened is he had a child with a woman, and she basically, you know, got custody of the child and then continued to try to take more and more custody away from him and increase his child support. She even had the nerve. She moved across town in Boston where, you know, it would be late for him to go through traffic, you know, all the time trying to get his daughter to school on time. So she had her attorney who, you know, knew the judge, was cozy with the judge, all that, basically tell the judge that because my brother had been tardy 10 times in 1 year, he didn't care about education. So the judge then reduced his visitation, so he would have to drive across town 3 times a week, only get his child for a couple hours, putting a huge burden on him. And then the final straw was he found a professorship job, full-time professorship job at Troy University in Alabama, and she continued to try to get more child support out of him. I think she was up to $700 a month. He was making like $38,000 a year as a brand-new professor. Well, mm-hmm. he was pre-leukemic, and so he tried to take on a fourth class to teach, not just the regular load of a three-class load that a regular mm-hmm. professor takes. And one of his friends even told me, he's like, I couldn't even do four classes, and I'm perfectly healthy. So the second he took that load on, about halfway through the semester, his symptoms just came on full-blown. He had to go into the hospital, and within 6 more months, he was dead.
Oh, my. And what about his children now?
The mother basically manipulates and uses and, you know, lets us hear maybe once a year. And keep in mind, this mother, you know, she came into the country, I am told, on an illegal grape-picking scheme as an illegal immigrant several years ago. And it just adds to the injury to me.
Hmm. And the children, so you see them only once a year, so they really have lost their identity as far as your brother was concerned. They don't know their heritage, probably their medical history.
Yeah, it's just one girl, and you know what really troubles me is, I mean, she could be really brilliant. My brother was like the most charismatic person, brilliant. I mean, he had 700 people show up for his funeral. I mean, I don't think I'd have, you know, 100 people show up for mine. But, I mean, my brother was so well-loved. And so I think, you know, the girl tells me she doesn't get straight A's. And, you know, just all that, you kind of realize he's not getting the upbringing, you know, he could have given her.
And so what are you doing? And where are you located, Rachel? What state?
I'm in Seattle.
Seattle, you're in Seattle. So what is going on there legislatively that you think is going to make a difference to children? And probably it's not going to, it won't make any difference to your niece at this point because she's how old?
She's 13.
13. So what's going on there legislatively and through judicial education that you can tell us about? Do you know of anything?
All I've heard is they've tried to bring shared parenting bills to the floor, but I don't believe they've gotten very far in this state. This is a much more liberal state, and you're going to have all the, you know, liberal state bar associations fighting those types of bills because, you know, the family law attorneys make too much money from protracting out the fighting.
And how are you involved on the ground there? Are you talking to legislators? I mean, how do you propose that? What's your plan for helping people to become strong advocates and signing new women on to our program? How are you telling them to approach their legislators? Because I find oftentimes when I'm trying to encourage people to approach legislators, and I grew up in a political family. My father was a congressman and a state representative for many years, and so it isn't scary to me, but it is scary to many people. So how do you talk to people that say, you know, I just don't know what to do, and how do I move forward in trying to make a difference?
Well, let me tell you what I'm doing, and you make me think, gosh, maybe I really should be talking more to legislatures myself. What I do, because I'm more of a writer, and for a while I was doing social media full-time, you know, I tend to add I kind of write about the issue and, you know, promote it on social media whenever I see articles. And let me give you an example. We have a good friend, one of my husbands and mine, one of our best friends. He was jailed for non-payment of child support over a child that's not even his. And I just thought that was so outrageous. I put up a website, a blog. It's called freeleeadelman.blogspot.com or freeleeadelman.weebly.com. You can go look it up. And, and we're just trying to raise money to, you know, keep this guy out of jail.
Listen, let me tell you something. Let me tell you somebody you might want to contact. Carl LeBove, who is a good friend of mine, a very well-known comedian. He's actually been on the show, and he headlines at MGM in Las Vegas. He's all over the place. But he had the same experience. He thought the child was his, raised this child, when in reality it was his best friend's, Sam Kinison, the very well-known comedian
Wow.
who was killed in a car accident. So you might
Yeah.
want to – and the IRS was after him, and child support was after him. Still to this day, he has trouble, and this child is probably 23 now. So you might want to contact Carl LeBove and see if he would come in and do a fundraiser for you.
Wow. Thank you so much. We'll look into that, because it is the same situation where the mother lied and told him that it was his child, and then a couple years later, after it's, you know, too late to protest paternity, he finds out that it really isn't his.
Wow. It's crazy. I mean, there's so many different scenarios that play out in family courts, and you know, from alienation all the way to not really being the daddy of a child. And people don't realize when you're just living your life and moving forward and trying to make it through day to day, you don't realize these things are going on everywhere.
Right. I mean, I always feel sorry for myself and my situation, you know, with, you know, my brother and things. And, you know, every time I start feeling sorry for myself, I realize some other person who looked like everything was great in their life has had the same thing, a family member die or be put in jail for child support or exactly. It's everywhere.
Well, I think, you know, with you out there, you're handling the West Coast, and I think that in Seattle, you are going to be a strong voice for this organization and really trying to make a difference there. The other thing that's so important, of course, is educating these judges to understand all of the different facets of what goes into raising a child and how it is so important that they have two-parent involvement in their lives. And here in Illinois, my partner, Judge Michelle Lawrence, we had her appointed by the Supreme Court to teach all of the family court judges on parental alienation and visitation interference, which is the precursor to parental alienation. And that worked out really well. We saw some differences. We've seen some differences. But there are so many judges that have been sitting so long. And normally they're male judges who have been on the bench for years and years and years. And their mindset is set, you know, and going to
well,
work and getting up.
And the problem is they're all buddy-buddy with a family law lawyer. So, you know, they're going to do what the family law lawyers want to do. It's such a good old boy system. And I'll tell you, one way I was helping was, you know, with Lee, my poor friend Lee, I, you know, intervened in his case and tried to file legal pleading to, you know, get him out of jail. And and I wasn't even successful. And, you know, I pointed out all these horrible things to the judge and the prosecutor. And they didn't even care that it wasn't his own child.
Well, hopefully with you behind him, he will be victorious, you know, at some point. And poor Lee has got to feel some emotional strings to this child, because did he raise this child at all?
Yeah, and he's so kind. I mean, he'll still, you know, care for the child, whatever. He just doesn't want to have to be on the hook for child support. The kid doesn't even live in the same state. And, you know, I got to tell you this just really added insult to injury. The mother had the nerve to have the child call Lee on Father's Day and say Happy Father's Day after she put him in jail.
Oh. Well, some people don't know any boundaries at all, and we'll stop at nothing to try to get emotional justice, you know. And I think that there are some really, really evil people out there, and will think of only themselves, selfish, narcissistic people who want to who just want to injure people, and will use children as a battleground and a weapon to do it.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny too when we think of our own situations and how bad they are. I mean, there's always somebody who has a much more, you know, scary situation with one of those types of crazy people. I mean, wow.
Sure.
Yeah.
You know, and I think, you know, I always, God put me in the situation I'm in as an alienated mother of four children for a reason. And I think that was to get the words parental alienation out there and let people know that it's not okay to do that. And you know, I'm always shocked when I get a phone call of someone saying, "Do you know what this is called? I just saw it on the internet." And I think I haven't done my job good enough because they don't know what I'm talking about yet. So anyway, yeah. I appreciate you calling in. Our next guest is here. And if you want to call me, you know, this week or sometime, I can get you contact information on Carl and we can try to work on that. Okay.
That would be great, and you run a great show, Jill. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks, Rachel. Have a great night, okay?
You too.
All right, bye-bye. Okay, we will move on. This is going wonderfully. Our next guest tonight is Christina Guerrero Cisneros. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. I probably butchered your name, didn't I?
No, you actually said it perfectly. I'm amazed.
Did I do okay? Well, I am Jill Ejizi, and everybody calls me something else. So I try always to be very good about names. But I welcome you tonight, Christina. And again, you're part of Leading Women for Shared Parenting, this wonderful group that was put together by Terry Brennan and Mike McCormick of the American Coalition for Fathers and Children. And we are a group of women who are speaking out strongly for shared parenting across the United States and Canada. Christina is a founding partner at Guerrero and Camplin PLC, where she practices family, criminal, and juvenile law, and was a staunch proponent of Nebraska's most recent shared parenting bill, LB 22. You are a proud mother of four sons, and you love motivational speaking. Me too. And I am so glad that you're part of this group.
It's actually six sons, but
oh, six
okay.
sons. Well, you know what? It says four right here, but gosh, yeah, four. You might as well have six, right?
Yeah.
Are any of them twins or triplets?
No, they're all individuals.
And are you hoping for a girl?
I think my body's kind of running out of steam. So.
It's tired. I bet it's tired. And boys wear you out. Yeah. What are their ages, Christina?
My oldest is 17 and ranges all the way down to a one-year-old.
Oh, boy. You really have your hands full.
Yeah,
well, I want to ask you why you got involved with this group.
The main reason I got involved in this group is because for the past 4 years, my concentration in my practice is family law. And I found it frustrating, I guess, when I would have a male client come in that I would get to know and see all the different things that they had done as a father and know that they were a fit father and a good father at that, who had done just as much as the mother in a lot of cases, and was finding that the judges in Nebraska felt that they were forced to choose between one or the other if the parents didn't agree on joint custody. And I was finding that if they didn't agree, it was usually mom that was getting custody, unless there was a valid reason for mom not to, as in she was unfit. So that's why I felt for my clients something needed to change.
And the bill that you were championing in Nebraska, LB 22, tell us a little bit about that.
It's more of a, you know, addressing my concerns, like I just said, starting with the presumption that you start with joint custody and work away from that given the situation versus picking one or the other. And then if they can agree, they move to joint. And a lot of people don't like it because they don't really understand it. But anyway, it's more of having a presumption that you start with a little closer to equal. It's not 50-50. I don't remember what exactly the percentages were, but it was just, you know, so that fathers or non-custodial mothers have more time with their children rather than every other weekend.
And where, how does that bill stand? Did it pass?
It is, I believe it's still sitting with a committee. There were some concerns. There's been a lot of voices against it, and so they've actually put together some teams to do some more research and to understand how it's going to affect child support. There's a lot of you know, strong voices on both sides that domestic violence advocates and, mm-hmm. you know, just attorneys that are used to the way things are just against it. And so we really are, you know, needing to do some research to kind of prove to some of the committee members to get it passed on, to be heard and voted on.
And maybe, Christina, explain a little more, because there may be people incredulously listening that are saying, how could someone be against a child having equal time with their parents? What basic reasons are there for these people to be opponents to this type of legislation?
Well, I have a good friend of mine. Is a very, very busy family law attorney that's done it for about 30 years. I want to say he cornered me mm-hmm. and kind of had his voice and said, you know, if they're getting divorced and they couldn't get along during the marriage, how are they going to get along to raise kids on a day-to-day basis? And, you know, and so they're like, oh, these people can't get along and the children are going to be put in the middle of it. Or there's the other people that say the domestic violence, as in men that are violent are going to use the joint parenting as a mechanism to have more control over the woman.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the two major things I hear. And the other one is that men are just trying to get out of child support, or I guess the non-custodial parent, but some of the more stereotypical comments I've had is men are trying to get out of child support.
Do you see the climate changing from a judicial standpoint in Nebraska? Do you see judges coming around at all, maybe one or two?
Actually, this, I was saying on my Facebook page that over the past 4 months, I went up on a temporary custody hearings anyway, and was able to actually get joint custody for four different male clients. And it was all four of them were adverse settings that I was really nervous about whether I was going to, you know, be able to get them joint custody. And they were awarded joint custody. And I'm kind of feeling that those judges are probably listening a little more and really trying to decide whether or not it could work.
And we've talked about judges being so set in their ways and very stodgy about the way that they sit behind the bench. But do you think the judicial mindset is such that there is a hesitancy to move towards 50-50 because it's such a newfangled way to parent?
I do think, in a way, that's one of them. I also think Nebraska also has the problem that there is old case law that says that if the parents can't agree to it, that there shouldn't be joint custody awarded. So, I mean, I think they're just, you know, nervous to go against what the case law said and, mm-hmm. you know, be appealed. And then you're throwing these children's life in an upheaval. And
yeah. How do you feel about, as a divorce attorney, how do you feel about the term custody?
How do I feel about the term custody? I think it's not understood, and I don't even like the term custody, actually. I mean,
There's so many negative connotations to so many terms that are in the divorce arena, and custody,
yeah.
I think, is one of, we wrote that out of the Illinois. The new Illinois IMDMA, so I think you know, finding some more pleasant word would be.
I agree. Like, who has more parenting time, or what is your parenting time versus custody? Seems to be like, who has the power?
Yeah,
you know.
How do you, when clients come to your office, how do you propose to them? And do they come to you because they see you as an aggressive attorney and they're coming in and they want to go for the throat? They want their emotional justice. They want their day in court. How do you calm people down, or do you, and let them know that there's a better way to handle it?
I am one that tries and explains to my clients that, you know, family law, whatever decision comes or whatever you do here is going to affect your entire family for the rest of your life. And if you go in completely hostile, you could send some red flags to a judge that you cannot get along. And B, I mean, if you and your ex hate each other, it's not even going to be good for your child. So So I will usually, I'm more of a proponent of try and get along, try and maximize the amount of time with your child, try and step it up and prove to the judge that you're a great parent. That is my approach.
And don't you think, I mean, when you go into court, and Judge Michelle and I try to tell people this all the time, in fact, we wrote it into our workbook, that presentation in court is about 90% of this. If you go in acting like the nut that they're trying to portray you as, that judge is
yes.
going to get that snap,
yes.
that five-minute snapshot of you, which is going to last with you throughout your entire case, which sometimes drags on for years.
Yeah. No, I agree, and I think a lot of the judges get tired of the hostile people, and I think a picture of a dad with or a non-custodial mom with their child, you know, going put swing in or something works way better than all these nasty accusations.
Well, I'm glad you're out there. It's so few times that you talk to a divorce attorney who's in the system, you know, in that cottage industry that exists, that's been created by lawyers and judges and court-appointed advocates and GALs, that is talking reasonably about what should happen with children. You know, most oftentimes I feel like lawyers are just trying to, you know, pay that overhead, bill those hours, and get and prolong that case. I mean, in the area that I work in with parental alienation, you know, keep them in court as long as you possibly can. As long as there's money to pay the bills, that's what you want to do. And I feel like you're out there looking at the best interest of the children and trying to really have a positive outcome for that family unit in whatever state it's in at that moment.
That is my goal.
And where is your office, Christina? You're where?
I'm in Lincoln, Nebraska.
In Lincoln, Nebraska. And
yes.
Do you have a website?
I do. It's www.lincoln-attorney.com.
And why would you tell people that they should get involved in this group, Leading Women for Shared Parenting?
Just because I think so often it's just people are thinking that this is happening just because men want to get out of child support or men this. And I think if women are saying, hey, men can be good fathers, or, you know, it's better for the children when you have, you know, a female voice to add to male voices. I mean, you're saying, okay, so the community as a whole thinks this might not be a bad idea. It's not just the men. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Makes absolute sense. I mean, I think,
okay.
You know, eventually, I think we have some men who have joined our ranks, and eventually I think this is going to catch on and spread like fire, because we have to make a difference here. We have to make
mm-hmm.
changes. Our children are suffering, and
yeah.
Children are not resilient through divorce, and this
mm-hmm.
affects them well into adulthood, and soon, you know, when you and I are in nursing homes, we're going to have an entire generation of kids who aren't going to be able to make decisions, who have failed relationships, who 48% of them don't want to get married at all. And we don't want that for our kids. I mean, think about your six boys and how probably what a wonderful life they have in Lincoln, Nebraska, and how successful you want them to be. But God forbid, if something happened to your marriage, how would that affect them? It would be devastating.
Yes.
So I think we have to every day put these children, whether we know them or not, and that's, you know, every time I get a call, I don't know these kids, but I try to hand out the resources and the all of the things that are needed to try to move forward in a positive way. How are you approaching legislators in your state, Christina?
Well, I I've had a couple pull me aside and they'll ask me a couple of questions. I mean, and I've emailed a few and just kind of say, hey, this is really what I'm finding and what's going on. And I've talked to them about the child support thing and say, it's not really what you think. And sometimes I do, you know, use my experience as a parent or as a GAL. I've been a GAL before. And
mm-hmm.
just that children want both parents, besides looking at the research and seeing. I mean, children just ultimately want to be with both parents. And I try and use the children. That's what I try and use, not just dad wants more time, but it's the children that want more time. And that's what needs to be important to everyone.
That's right. And I think when people hear the children and these parents aren't being portrayed as victims, that the children are the ones that could potentially be the victim and are in most cases, that
yes.
people really sit up and take notice when they realize that this could, the end result is really emotional devastation of children. And
yes.
in a case of parental alienation, emotional child abuse, then, you know, we have to lift those children up and be able to really, really make an impact on their lives. So I'm so glad we have you in Nebraska doing that. And, you know, most if Nebraska's legislature is anything like Illinois, a lot of these guys here and ladies have had the experience of a divorce and some, you know, not very nice ones. So when
yes.
you're talking to legislators, chances are that they can draw on their own personal experience with what
mm-hmm.
they've been through in the family courts. And they know it's time for a change.
Yes. I agree with that.
Well, Christina, let's mention your website one more time.
It's www.lincoln-attorney.com.
Well, good. And let me ask you this, because I always have questions about attorneys in different areas of the country. Do you handle parental alienation cases?
I do.
Do okay. Well, I'm going to put you on my list, and next time I get a Lincoln, Nebraska call, you are going to be my first referral. So I appreciate your time here tonight, and just keep encouraging people to speak out for our group and speak out for shared parenting, and we're glad to have you. Proud to have you.
All right. Thanks so much for all your hard
Thanks.
Work.
Thank you very much. I'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye.
While we're waiting for our next guest, I'm going to go into the chat room, and there's some great people here, some of our regulars, some of our Illinois guys. Our chapter manager from Ohio is in the group tonight. So a lot of guys listening, and this is great. Mick and Robert and Mike, thanks for listening in. There's some other people here. I'm not sure who they are, but if you have any questions in the chat room, please post them. We're getting echoes from these guys. It's definitely time for a change. Why do people like the term joint custody? Don't you think equal is fairer and best for the kids? The issue of custody is problematic right off the bat, and courts are not equipped to make these decisions. Only parents should be invested in their children's lives and their future. So not joint custody, but equal custody. That's my opinion. And one of our guys says, that's because we love the ladies. Well, we love you guys, too, and appreciate all that you do, because there are some really strong, terrific advocates in the chat room. If one of you guys want to call in and chat with me for a minute while I'm waiting for Terry Gaspard to call, I would love to hear from you. So if you want to call in and vent or give me some of your opinions, of course, the attorney Mick Gerhart is on from Chicago. He has his own television show in Chicago, does a great job there talking about the family court system. And one of the guys is asking, what's the holdup with judicial education? Well, Mick, why don't you call in and you tell me? I mean, you know as well as I do what's going on with some of these judges, and you're in it in Cook County, the largest family court system in the nation, maybe in the world. You're there every day, and you know that as much work as Judge Michelle Lawrence and I have tried to do, there are still hang-ups from some of these judges, and, you know, you just can't figure it out. Are they afraid to go out on a limb? We don't know. They've got the toolbox that we've handed to them, letting them know what's best for kids, but some of them only pull out, you know, maybe a wrench here and there or a screwdriver. They haven't used the whole toolbox yet. So we're trying to work to get that done. I think Terry Gaspard is here, so I'm going to pick Terry up. Hi, Terry. How are you?
I'm good. Hi, Jill. I'm glad I was able to get through.
I'm so glad you could call in tonight. And again, you are part of the group Leading Women for Shared Parenting, and we are glad to have you here to tell us why you got involved. First, tell me what you do, Terry. What do you do on a daily basis?
Sure. I'm a licensed clinical social worker. So I work with children, couples, and families. Mm-hmm. who deal with a variety of issues, but my primary focus of my practice has been divorce. So I do a lot of counseling with children of divorce, all the way through adulthood, believe it or not, with couples, you know, doing some, you know, premarital counseling and,
sure.
you know, I'm not a licensed mediator, but I do some of that work, and I deal with families. I'm also a writer, very busy. I have on my own website,
mm-hmm.
which is called movingpastdivorce.com. I write blogs. I write columns for Huffington Post Divorce.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a regular contributor to that and several other websites, really to look at ways that parents can successfully co-parent, you know, get involved in shared parenting. I write a lot about the importance of the father-daughter relationship,
right.
because that's a topic that I've done a lot of research on. And my book, which I hope is going to be published fairly soon, hopefully in the next 6 months, is about daughters of divorce. So I've done actually extensive studies on the outcomes for females being raised in divorced families. So I can also speak to that issue.
Great. Well, let me know, Terry, just before the book's about to come out, and we can do a show on that, or, you know, whenever you want, whatever's good for your
timeline.
That'd
be great.
We'll do a
Thank
show,
you.
Definitely. Now, are you a mom? You have two children, right?
Yes, I do. I have three children, but one's younger. I have two grown children who were raised in a shared parenting situation with my ex-husband, and that actually worked out really well. We were able to live in the same community. And we had pretty close to equal time with our children. And they've actually maintained close bonds with both of us. None of that has been disrupted. We both made a commitment. You know, obviously, divorce happens for a reason. You know, two people don't get along and have their own issues. But in our case, we were really on the same page for the majority of the time in terms of their education and their lifestyle. And so we pretty much shared all decisions, and the kids spent close to equal time with us, and we still live in the same community, and that works out well. Currently,
That's
I am
terrific.
Happily remarried and have a teenager.
Ah, okay. How old is your teenager?
She's 14.
14, oh boy.
And she has good relationships with her two siblings, so that works out.
Great. Well, I want to talk to you in just a second about how you and your ex-husband reached that decision to co-parent. But I wanted to ask you, you were raised by your father, is that right?
Yes, it was a very unusual situation in that era around 1960,
yeah.
where my mother actually was the one that decided to leave the family home. And so she left, and she left me and my sisters with my father. And there were short periods that I did live with my mother, but the majority of my childhood was actually spent with my father. I did have contact with my mother, and we maintain a good rapport until her death. But my primary contact and residence was always with my father. So that, there you go with my interest in father-daughter relationships.
Right.
And my close bond with my father. My father was unique in that he was an artist. So, you know, he spent a lot of time doing work at home, and I spent a lot of time with him going to art shows. But I've always been really interested in promoting parenting for dads because I think that overall they tend to be stereotyped as being self-centered and as being less involved or interested in being parents and spending quality time with their kids. And because that hasn't been my experience, Jill,
mm-hmm.
my experience was just the opposite, I think that shattering those myths is really important.
Very important, very important. I find it interesting that, you know, so few women did what your mother did in that era, just like you
yes,
said.
Yes, she was different that way.
How do you think it affected you emotionally, and what do you carry with you today that came out of that experience of her leaving the family?
It did cause some abandonment issues and some self-esteem issues. It definitely did. I mean, I've worked through those in therapy myself. I'm very much aware. In addition, there are some trust issues, you know,
mm-hmm.
that come as a result of one of your parents leaving. But I frankly think it would have been a lot worse for me if I had not had that close bond with my father.
Right. And your sibling?
So, I mean, he was my stable source of, you know, I mean, it was hard. I'm not saying it was easy, But my dad was always there for me. I remember we lived in the on the coast of California. I remember wonderful time spent with him, you know, long walks, the beach. Mm-hmm. And, you know, throughout my life, I always considered him to be my rock.
Yeah.
He was always there for me. And my mother, you know, we had close times, too. You know, later she did explain to me why she left. She had gone to graduate school. She was very educated. And she just basically said, I fell out of love with your dad. And, you know, he wasn't willing to make any changes. So, you know, I decided to make the decision to leave. But she also came from a divorced family, so she didn't have the best role models.
Right.
You know, for that kind of thing. But, I mean, it did impact me, and those are issues that I write about in my book in terms of daughters of divorce. One of the biggest issues I've seen, which I've been able to work through, especially because I had that close bond with my dad, is abandonment issues, trust issues, and self-esteem issues. And if those are addressed and you're aware of them, you certainly can go on and have healthy, intimate relationships. I don't think we have to be necessarily doom and gloom about it, but we have to acknowledge that divorce is challenging for children. I do think it would have been better for me if I had had more contact with my mother. In those days, we didn't really understand what shared parenting was. So I don't think it was part of their vocabulary, you know, to say, well, you know, mom and dad can share time. It was either one or the other. So
do you think that shaped your decision to enter the profession that you did?
Definitely. Definitely. I found my niche because as a psych major, you know, I was interested in a lot. I did internships in medical settings, and I was always drawn to the children and the families. And then when my youngest daughter got to be a little older, I said, you know, I'm going to go back to the research that I had done in graduate school. Mm-hmm. And I was always interested in the long-term impact of divorce. And then, of course, with women, I think most of the newer studies are coming out, just like I interviewed over 200 women over the last few years, are showing that women, definitely girls going into young adulthood, are more vulnerable because we tend to define ourselves more through relationships.
Mm-hmm.
And we're socialized to be caregivers. And then not to mention, often after divorce, many girls don't have as much contact with their fathers. I was unique in that way. In fact, Linda Nielsen, who's part of our group, her research shows that dads tend to have only 10 to 15% of dads have shared parenting. You know, that number is going up, but, you know, it's not a huge group that enjoy, you know, joint or shared parenting.
Oh, I want to make you work a little bit just before you go because Jill Burke's going to come on in just a second. I have one of the dads in the chat room asked this question. I was just reunified with my daughter after 4 years of alienation. He wants to know how to strengthen that relationship. Do you have some good words of wisdom for him?
Yeah, I would say that counseling can be a good support. I think that it's really important to consider that as an option because of the issues that I mentioned with the trust and the self-esteem. And the main thing on a day-to-day basis is to make yourself available, knowing that kids are not always going to want to talk at the times that we're interested in talking to them.
Right.
So trying to do some shared activities, you know, that you can both enjoy, whether it's bike riding or, you know, going for a walk, going to do things that you enjoy. Just letting her know in an honest way, you know, what your view of it is and listening to her, you know, and giving her support for whatever her feelings are. Girls do tend to like to talk about their emotions. And I think that, you know, that kind of comes out naturally in the course of spending time together. Show some interest in, you know, in her activities, whatever they would be, school, friends. One thing that teenagers definitely don't like is that they have to choose between their friends and their parents. So I always recommend that parents not say, well, you can't spend time with that friend or whatever because this is your time with me. You kind of really have to, you know, bear it and just realize that that's part of being a teenager or so in that
You're
age.
Exactly
and the younger,
right.
Yeah, and younger kids,
perfect.
Say they're a little more home-based. But
that's a perfect little set of information for you, Michael. So take that to heart, because I think Terry really knows what she's talking about. I appreciate you being here, and please do get in touch with me, and we can set up a show for your book. Your website is movingpastdivorce.com. Terry, it's been great to talk to you. Thank you for being a part of this group, and thanks for spending time with us tonight.
Thank you, Jill.
I'll talk to you soon.
Bye.
Bye-bye. And last but not least, Jill Burke, how are you?
Hi, good.
We have Jill squared now. Jill and Jill are on. And that was my best friend in high school was Jill, and so they called us Jill squared. So that's what we'll be for the next 15 minutes. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing good.
Good. I'm glad you could be here. Thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule. You are also part of the group Leading Women for Shared Parenting. You're the director at the Carnegie Regional Library in Grafton, North Dakota, where you've been for just a little under 6 years. You're a proud mother of a soon-to-be 15-year-old son, probably 15 by now, because I'm reading a bio from...
Just about 1 week.
Okay, and he has close to equal time as possible with both parents, and
yes.
That is amazing. You have been a leader in the pursuit of equally shared parenting in North Dakota. You submitted a petition to the Secretary of State to have shared parenting ballot initiative during the 2014 election. You ensured all of the 25 named sponsors of the petition were women to show their support for equally shared parenting. You also had previous legislative experience having pursued an anti-bullying bill so important in North Dakota, which was signed into law in 2011. Boy, that bully for you is what I say. That is terrific, because bullying has become really a horrible thing. And when I work in the parental alienation world, we've gone to saying that really parental alienation is bullying of a child by a parent. So
yes.
Tell me a little bit about why you felt such a strong affection for Leading Women for Shared Parenting and why you joined.
I just actually learned about you guys not long ago after I submitted the sponsoring list. I believe Terry sent me an email and had me check out the website, and I was just amazed that women of such caliber were joining together, and this is a bigger issue than just here in North Dakota, that it's our whole country. Other countries, it was very inspiring to be a part of such a group of women fighting for children's rights.
And in North Dakota, how do you see, I'm always interested in other states. I know what happens in Illinois. And for all the things that we do wrong here and are publicized for, we kind of get family law sort of right in some cases. But North Dakota, what's the climate like there? How do you see judges moving toward a middle-of-the-road kind of attitude?
Well, I have to say right now our percentage is 90% of divorce cases, hands down, the mom has full custody. I know of cases that fathers have requested fitness hearings, and judges are just throwing them out. It's going to be quite a process to get the judges on board with this. I think they're used to the way it's always been set up. We've had actually some resistance from our state government already. Just this past November, my significant other, Mitchell Sanderson, and I, we got for Walsh County a petition and ended up getting the vote passed by 66% in Walsh County. And at that time, when the first case was introduced into the court system, the Attorney General intervened and struck down our law. That kind of tells me what we're fighting against here.
Right.
Yeah. But what I think is educating the public over the last year or so, out of 10 people, maybe one person didn't agree with this. And there's so many people out there that haven't been affected yet by this. Maybe, you know, mothers with young sons haven't been affected by divorce yet until it happens to their son or mm-hmm. to a family member. But just visiting and spreading the word, getting people aware of what is going on, I'm hoping will be key to making some changes.
I think it's so important what you say, Jill, because people don't realize when it's not happening to them. And I was one of them.
Right.
I mean, I never thought I would be divorced. Never, ever, ever, ever.
Right.
And when that happened to me, I thought that the family court system would be the place where right and justice would prevail.
Yes.
That it doesn't happen that way, does it?
Sadly, no, it does not. In my divorce 7 years ago, I offered joint custody in the very beginning and was literally told by my attorney, which turned out to be a former attorney, that somebody's got to have full custody. Somebody's got to pay child support.
Yeah.
So we're being swayed also, not even in, you know, before we even get to the courtroom, by our attorneys. It's going to take a lot of education, but we have to start somewhere. And
we have to. Just chipping away at it, little by little,
is
the important thing. Now, your own personal situation, you have a child who flourishes in shared parenting while your boyfriend's child suffers. And so explain both sides of that to me.
Okay. First of all, my son, soon to be 15, we have given him power, which children need to have that for confidence. We give him decision-making skills. We don't put him under pressure. Well, you're supposed to be here tonight. You're supposed to be there tonight. We let him have some control of the situation. And there is no guilt, and there is no making him feel bad because he's just the most well-adjusted. He has self-confidence. He does well in school. He's very kind-hearted. And I do believe a lot of it is because he has seen two adults doing what's right for him.
Mm-hmm.
We're not doing this because it makes us happy, because of course I'd want him with me all the time. But we have to put aside our feelings as parents to do what's best for our kids. And I can't imagine somebody trying to convince me otherwise, because I see it. On the other hand, my boyfriend has two children, a son and a daughter. And he is in a situation where his ex-wife follows the custody arrangements to the T. We live in the same community. He is only allowed contact with his children every other weekend and an hour and a half on Wednesday evenings.
Mm.
And another issue is if she does not feel like bringing them for a scheduled visit, she just doesn't bring them. And there's no repercussions for that behavior. Speaking of behavior, the one child, the daughter, is very acts out, disruptive in school. The son is very withdrawn, lacks confidence. They are missing a key part of their development by being kept from their father.
Do they take anything away from what your son is experiencing? Do they see how well that works for him and try to speak to their mother?
Well, the son is 12, the daughter is 11. At this point, they relay to Mitch that they're afraid to tell her.
Yeah.
They don't have that feeling of security, and they're afraid to make her angry, because they do tell us they want to spend more time with us,
mm-hmm.
but yet they're afraid to tell her. I'm sure some of it is they don't want to make her feel bad, or, you know, kids are so worried about making someone mad at them or making someone feel bad. They haven't been developed properly to give them the skills to stand up and say, "Mom, I want to spend more time with Dad." They're not capable, I don't think, to do that.
She sounds like a perfect candidate to sway to our side and have her become
part
of our group.
Goodness.
I mean, if we can get an ex-president of NOW to be a part of the group, this woman is not a challenge at all.
I would be shocked if that were to happen. I just believe that it's so important. This is for what's best for kids, and shared parenting is the closest thing that resembles an intact family as you can have. And another thing, the gal prior to me, being a social worker, I'm sure she knows this as well, that parents in a joint custody setting have reported less conflict. You know, so by providing shared parenting, I mean, we're taking risks away. We're taking conflict away. And, you know, we want to prepare our kids for this world. It's getting harder to, you know, the different issues in our nation and the cost of things. You know, kids, we need to raise well-adjusted kids to be able to make it in the world.
Absolutely. And putting them in front of a video game and leaving them to fend for themselves keeping them from one parent or the other, or grandparents in some cases, is not a good thing for a child.
Right.
We've got about 2 minutes left. I want to know from you how, if someone wants to reach you in North Dakota, do you have a website or a contact email that people could maybe talk with you about getting involved legislatively there in North Dakota?
Absolutely. Right now I'm using my email account, which is jillbierke@hotmail.com. And I also have, I can be contacted on the Leading Women for Shared Parenting page.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I also just set up a Facebook page in attempts to reach supporters, called Shared Parenting in North Dakota.
Okay, terrific. Shared Parenting in North Dakota. And I apologize for butchering your name, Bierke, not Berg.
Fine.
I asked
not
Terry today and said the J is silent, and that's all he told me. So I did the best I could. But Jill, appreciate you coming on, telling us your story, both the positive and the negative side of what happens in your day-to-day life as far as your family's concerned. And I hope for those kids that their mom turns around and that someday your boyfriend can have the same wonderful relationship that you have with your ex-husband, with his ex-wife. We'll keep hoping for that. I appreciate you being here. Thanks so much, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Okay, thank you so much.
Bye-bye. Well, everybody, I think we had a really great show tonight. I appreciate y'all being here. And if you're interested in Leading Women for Shared Parenting, the website is www.lw4sp.org, Leading Women for Shared Parenting. What a great group of women. I'm so glad you could tune in tonight. Thank you to everyone in the chat room for being here. And we will see you next time. Have a great night. This is Jill Ajeezy. This was Family Matters. Good night, everybody.